Welcome to His Holy Church X Space. I'm Brother Gregory, and when we're talking about global economics, we did a show on kingdom economics. And of course, from the point of view of economics, the kingdom is basically a capitalist system, because the rights that were granted by God are individual rights. And so therefore your right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness endowed by God would mean that you have a right to pursue happiness, and you would do that with your labor and what you produced. And what you produced would belong to you. And if you wanted to trade with other people, you would be trading in real time with things that you thought were of value. That's basically capitalism. What you produce is your capital. In order to produce, you know, there was a saying, I don't know if I can remember it exactly, but in order to, the first capital was the first farmer, because he was going to produce something from the ground, planting, dressing, and keeping it. And what he produced was his, and then he could go and trade that with other people. So some of the requirements for kingdom economics, which we find listed in the Bible, is that you're not to make any covenants with anybody else. Because when you make an agreement with somebody else, an agreement that requires performance, maybe acceptance and performance, you've given up access to some of your rights. You've limited your rights by that agreement. Now, obviously, you can make an agreement that I'll give you this if you give me milk. I'll give you this food. I'll give you this wool blanket that I made, and you give me the plow that you made, because I need a plow and I got lots of wool blankets. So you make a trade. But that's not what they're talking about when they're talking about covenants. Even the word in the Bible that we see translated covenant is often translated league, which has to do with like a treaty, an agreement with large numbers of people. And one of the things that, if you had a king, that he wasn't to multiply wives, which has to do with making agreements. You agree to do something for this guy. In order to consummate the agreement, he gives you one of his daughters. And multiplying wives, even though the idea of marriage is the idea of an agreement, where you're binding certain things together. So, and they talk about pledges and all that stuff in the Bible, but basically you needed just weights and measures if you were going to have a capitalist economy. You know, like you say, well, an ounce of gold, an ounce of silver, an ounce of copper, these are things that you can measure out. So you have to, how do you measure an ounce? Well, you have to have just weight so that you actually know what you're getting. But basically what they're saying is that when you have just weights and measures, you have present value in the commodities that you give. Because if you're going to say that I promise to give you 50 lambs from my lamb crop after they're born and raised up, if you give me this now, then now you're bound. You have to give those things. If you don't produce them, you don't have them now. It's a promise to pay in the future. And of course, when they went into the bondage of Egypt, that's exactly what they did. If you give us grain today to eat, we will promise to give you 20% of our labor tomorrow and forever. And they were given. So that's the bondage of Egypt. And the kingdom economy, you have to make real-time exchanges. You can say, I intend to give you this, and maybe he will trust you, but if it becomes contractual, then your desire to pursue happiness, you know, is now limited. So capitalism is this system of individual rights, individual responsibilities. It requires just weights and measures. It requires that you don't make leagues and covenants with other people that would begin to limit your rights, that limit your access to rights, because maybe you created obligations that you have to now fulfill that obligation, and you can't pursue happiness. And you may not even be able to pursue the things that you need for life. And debt is that way. That debt starts taking away your choices. Your choices are a part of those endowed rights. So that's capitalism. That's kingdom economy. But it doesn't offer you any kind of system of social welfare that is guaranteed or even functional by itself. But in the kingdom, we have systems of social welfare where you take care of the needy of society through free will offerings. And Moses, you know, Jacob set up altars. Abraham set up altars. And as we've been going through our study of Genesis and Leviticus and even Exodus, those altars were systems of social welfare. But they were based on free will offerings. They had a lot of free will offerings right up front. We just recently, in our study of Leviticus, talked about sin offerings or guilt offerings and burnt offerings and what these mean, heave offerings and wave offerings. And they're not all just different kinds of offerings, but they're offerings at different for different purposes at different stages. But you have the first fruits were already required earlier. And the first fruits was, you had to give, you were supposed to give, nobody was policing it, because you don't really have any police in a kingdom economy either, because everybody is police, everybody is responsible for justice, because if you want the right to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, you have to care about the right of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness for others. If you don't care about others, why would they need to care about you? And so then you'll find yourself isolated and alone with no support from anybody else. And there won't be anybody that comes to your aid when you need help, when you break your leg. You know, Margaret Mead said that one of the first signs of civilization is somebody broke their femur bone. They found bones where the femur bone had been broken when he was, you know, 20 or whatever. And it healed back. Well, there's no way that he was a hunter-gatherer and broke a femur bone and it healed back unless other people were helping him. So that's an essential part of your pursuit of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, unless you want to be an absolute total hermit. And that's not what the kingdom is all about. The kingdom is about coming together. So how do you come together to provide police protection, military protection, in case somebody invades, if there's a flood, if there's a snowstorm, if there's a drought? How do you protect against the world and the, you know, the people of the world and bad actors and, you know, lions that want to eat you? How do you protect that if you're all alone? You have to have some way of getting together. And of course, those systems of social welfare we've been describing was a way to create the social bonds. So the bonds are based, because they're free will offerings, they're based on love. That you actually care about other people and you want to reciprocate. They helped you, you want to help them. So that's part of the kingdom economy. It's a capitalist economy, but it has a system of social welfare based on charity alone. But then, now where do you get that police force that we said you will probably need if criminals come by? Or an army if, you know, someone attacks your valley that you live in? Well, that's also going to be created when you create the social bonds between other people. And as we've shown in Genesis and Exodus and Leviticus and other chapters like Deuteronomy, they created a system where there was tables set by the people for the welfare of those who did fall in need, and they helped keep the people alive and free so that they could pursue happiness. you could pursue happiness because everybody's mutually contributing. Now, obviously, there's going to be differences, but because this is all voluntary and open and above board, that you also create these relationships with people where they appreciate what you did or your father did or your grandfather did, and they will come to your aid. Hopefully, because you're living by faith, hope, and charity. So what kind of a government is this, and still, how do you have a police force? Well, every man's a police force in the kingdom of God. And if somebody attacks you, it's like they attacked, you know, your neighbor thinks that's like you attack them, and they will come to your aid. Of course, we saw that with Abraham, was teaching people how to build altars, and then he saw somebody take his nephew Lot, and they made an army overnight and went and defeated him. That was because they had learned to build the altars that created the social bonds that made men willing to drop what they were doing, and like Minutemen in the days of early America, they came to their aid. If you did not have that system, maybe nobody would come to your aid because they didn't have the social bonds. I remember a story when Fremont was traveling through the Americas here, just above our place. They actually, Fremont came down, he came first to Winter Ridge, and then he came down behind the Summer Lake store. They brought a cannon and mules and a milk cow. He was traveling with all this stuff, and they were trying to get out of the snow. And at another time, they were traveling through the mountains near where they call the marshes. And they decided, I think it was like the 4th of July or something, and they were going to try out their cannon. And they were camped in an area where they could see little smokes coming up way off in the distance. And they knew those smokes were probably Indians at their camps, you know, where they had their tents, and they were all around. Of course, the Indians aren't herding livestock, so they're just completely hunter-gatherer, and they're all spread out. And they fired their cannon off early in the morning just to kind of, I think it was the 4th of July, but some reason they decided they weren't shooting at anybody. They were just firing it off. And when that big boom went off, people could hear it for miles and miles. And they said that all those little smokes and all those little campfires all around the country, they could see for miles and miles, they all disappeared. People quickly put the smoke out. They didn't know what that was, but they didn't want whatever made it finding them. So they shut everything down because they feared that they'd never heard anything like that. But what would they do if some, you know, the Indians that were up there, I don't know which ones those would have been. The Klamath Indians were always attacking the Paiute Indians, and there were a few other tribes around, and they were always fearing that they would be raided and maybe killed, robbed, their young girls taken off. Even sometimes the young men would be taken off as servants in their own tribes. And all that was going on all the time. But how would they defend themselves? In the days of Israel, they would blow the shofar, because they're all spread out too, because they're herding flocks. And they hear the shofar, and they would blow their shofar, and then somebody else would blow their shofar, and all across the country you would hear the shofar going off. They probably had a code, blow it a certain way, it meant a certain thing. But armed men would come running from every direction, because you called for help. And that was the police force. It was the hue and cry of the people. And they answered that hue and cry because everybody was already in a charitable welfare system. They had a system whereby you could eat if there was need, that was providing for you. And there was a surplus because of the firstborn offering that you just gave. You just, you know, the first fruits, you just gave it to the ministers of this system. And there was qualifications for that minister, but we won't go into that now. But this is your police force. It's also your army. But it's an all-voluntary army. Okay, that's all kingdom system. And then we talked about soul economics. That if you decide to do certain things a certain way, I could also mention in the kingdom economics, if you had disputes, you also had to settle them. So they had to have courts. And they had local courts based on their congregations. 10 families got together. So when you had a court, now when there was a military need, it was every young man was expected to show up and help. There was no penalties. You didn't go to jail if you didn't show up, but they would know you didn't show up. We called for help and you didn't show up. And society would know, you know, when you call for help, don't expect to see us showing up because you didn't show up for us. But they had this as the original agreement. It's not an agreement like a contract, covenant, a constitution. It's more like a memorandum of understanding. Even the word Torah, as we think of laws, are actually just statements saying, we're trying to tell you how a free government operates, which is why at the beginning of the Wycliffe Bible, I said this is the book for the government of the people, for the people, and by the people. All the taxes were free will offerings called tithes. All the people were gathered together in groups of 10. So whatever you gave, that was your tithe. It was all voluntary offerings, so it wasn't like you had to pay in 10%. It was you gave according to what you thought was needed. And if you were selfish, that the people would find out. They would note that. Same thing goes on in the Amish community all the time. But you had to have these courts, and those courts were men who were married and had a family. It wasn't every 20-year-old. It was the elders of the family would sit and judge a matter. But that could bring injustice, so you need to have a way to appeal a local case. Well, they had that too. And that was the appeals courts, what they call the cities of refuge. And those courts were composed of ministers who were in the business of maintaining the charitable institutions of the altars. Again, if you're following our study on Leviticus, you know that the altars of stone were altars of men. And the wood they put on it was the counsel of those men to men who would help distribute according to the needs. I mean, in your congregation, you receive so many donations, and you can redistribute that amongst the needy of your congregation. But this is a national government. So therefore, you have all those ministers serving congregations. They have a minister. That's a priest. And they counsel with each other, and if there was surplus in one congregation, they needed it in another, the minister of each of those ministers would help, through that counsel, divide the bread from congregation to congregation, and the local ministers would divide it from house to house. This was a system of social welfare. In capitalism, you have to have something like that, because there is no means by which you can simply take from your neighbor. You can't tax them. That would not be kingdom politics. That would be some other form of government. And that's what we're going to talk about today is globalism. Because globalism, as we know it today, when we use the phrase globalism, we're talking about a system where large numbers of the people are subject. They don't own anything. Not really. They have a right, they have a privilege to certain things, but they don't really own it. Everything is owned collectively, and somebody manages the system, including all the people that are in the system and subject to it. Now, again, there will be lots of degrees when they construct this. Socialism is a form of that type of government. Communism is another form of that type of government. But actually, when you have kings, which claim a divine right to rule, and they refer to their citizens as subjects, that's another form of that. And there are several elements that would create that more and more. And that starts to fall under this pattern we could label globalism. You know, where you own nothing, but you're still going to be happy, and you better smile because somebody has the authority to cut you off. You know, like social credits. All of a sudden, in China, if you don't have good social credit, you can't buy a ticket to go to the next town. You might not be able to do a lot of things. They might close out your bank account. I mean, we did that during certain events in Canada, in the United States. You could be debanked. But of course, we've already know that the system of the United States does not have just weights and measures. They have Federal Reserve notes, and we can give you examples of that. In Egypt, you know, and for large periods of time in Egypt, people did not trade silver and gold coins because all the silver and gold was in the hands of the government. After the famine, that was pretty much the case everywhere. But they had what they called scarabs, which were little clay discs or tablets that looked like a beetle, about the size of a beetle, and they had little numbers carved on them. They found thousands of them over the years. A lot of people couldn't figure out what were they used for. Well, that's money. Now, of course, they also had commodity money where you could trade grain and other things that you produced, and everybody was farming to some degree or another. So there was a way to do that, but they didn't really have a capitalist state. They had a socialist state. You paid the government, and the government would take care of you in time of need. But so that's one system. That's where you're in bondage. That's where you're literally merchandise. And when we went through our study on Jacob back there in Genesis, Jacob left his father's house because of the whole story. We don't have to go into the whole story. He feared for his life, and he ended up fleeing to his, according to the direction of his mom, to her family, which brought him to Laban. And he wanted to marry Laban's daughters. But Laban did things different than Abraham. He had a system where the people were his possessions. That you could call it idolatrous. Of course, idolatry, according to Paul, is covetousness. So what had already happened, what they did in Haran, what they had done in Ur, was started creating a system, not a capitalist system, but a system where the people are subject, where the people are possessions. We saw an example of that in Sodom. That's the way Sodom was set up. When Abraham and his fellow altar goers all got together and defeated this army. Now the army's done for, and all their prisoners can go where they want, theoretically. Because they came and saved this stuff, they had a right to some of the spoils. Because they didn't have to come and save this. These people that were captured and all the stuff they were taking. But Bera came and said, you could have this stuff. Bera is the king of Sodom. You could have this stuff, but give me the people. Well, does Abraham now own the people? Well, Bera thinks he owns the people and he wants them to be, I own the people and the stuff, but you can, because of this great service, you can keep the stuff, but give me the people. Of course, Abraham said he wouldn't take any of this stuff. He didn't really say what he was going to do with the people. I don't think he wanted to enslave them because of the nature, and we studied that, of what Abraham was doing. Because Abraham could have been the king of Haran. But he saw there was something wrong with that divine right of kings. The idea of the people being subject, the people being possessions, the people being human resources for the ruling class. He saw there was a problem with that, and he was going off and doing something different, which required that he build these altars, which were voluntary systems of social welfare. Doesn't work with selfish people. It only works with unselfish people. It doesn't work for people who hate the government. The people didn't follow Abraham because they hated government, but they loved liberty. And they learned to love each other, and they learned to help each other, and they learned to come to the aid of one another. Abraham was finding his way through this new way. Isaac was pretty good at it, but Jacob had to flee. And he fled to Laban, who was operating according to the idolatrous way that Terah and Nahor were operating. So he had authority to collect taxes from all of his subjects, from all the people he possessed. It wasn't out-and-out slavery, but it was a system of being subject to Laban. And so when Laban went to shear his sheep, collect his taxes, that's a metaphor, shear the sheep. I mean, we still could use the metaphor of shearing the flock to the idea of collecting taxes. It's just a metaphor. And he was going to go do that. In order to do that, he had to show the symbol of his authority, which we call idols. But he couldn't find them. When he went to shear the sheep, he couldn't find them. Why? Because he kept the idols in the shearing shed? No, because that was a symbol of his authority to collect the taxes. Later on, we see in the case of Judah, his authority was like a medallion and a ribbon that held it around his neck and a staff. That showed his authority. So when he went to shear the sheep, he had to have that medallion. That was his authority, but somebody else had got it. Long story we won't go into. What I'm trying to, by going back and reviewing capitalism a little bit, I want you to understand globalism. Globalism is a collective. Capitalism is individuals coming together bound by nothing but faith, hope, and love. You hope they will show up for you. Now, what kind of a government would that be? Because capitalism is not a government, it's just an economic system. Well, capitalism won't stay capitalism in a democracy where the people can vote, you have to pay in. They can vote that you have to share your land. You have to vote, you can vote that you have to share part of your grain. That's a democracy. It's mob rule. There may be a lot of rules on what you could do and can't do. It might be an indirect democracy, but a democracy is you ruling over your neighbor. That's not what capitalism is. You're not ruling over your neighbor. So you'd have to have another form of government other than democracy, other than socialism. Socialisms are often democracies. Not always, because communism is not a democracy, really. It has a single group party that somebody gets to elect those guys, but the general population, they might vote, but they only have one person to vote for. But democracy leads to socialism, and socialism leads to communism. So they're related. So what is the other kind of government that you would find capitalism in where it could survive? Well, it would be a republic. But the original word for republic in the Latin is libera res publica, which means, libera being in the ablative, it means free from things public. So whatever your inalienable rights are, and we go through this in our article on Citizen at Preparing You and also at HisHolyChurch.org, there are citizen defined by, you know, in the United States by the 14th Amendment. And there's another citizenship not defined by the 14th Amendment, but more as a natural inhabitant of the land, where you have the right to marriage, the right to have children, the right to capitalism. And those unions are not subject to the administration of government. But if you create a government, a civil government, it may create rules. Like you can get married in many states and not go down and get a license to get married. You just get married. You go in front of witnesses. It's not supposed to be a secret marriage, but you go in front of witnesses and you say, you go to the girl's parents because she belongs to her parents. and you ask permission of the parents, can I marry your daughter? And they may come up with all kinds of terms, and you may say, no, I want a frank marriage. That means that, no, she's going to be my wife. She's not going to be a part of your family anymore. She's going to be a part of my family. Now, supposedly, you're getting her consent and her parents' consent. That's a frank marriage. People don't hardly do that anymore. They actually, many people will think that's strange. But the fact is, if you want to get married, get a license to get married. License is permission. You go down to the state to get a license. Why? Because over the last 200 years, your daughters became possessions of the state. And you may have become a possession of the state. Unless you don't like the word possession. Okay, I get it. You don't want to say you're a slave of the state. That would make you feel bad. And so we won't use that right now. We'll call you a human resource. And we know you're a human resource because the government has a human resource department that takes care of your needs, helps you find work, helps you with unemployment, protects you in the way that you're employed so that, you know, that some HR will make sure you're not abused as an employee. But that's not capitalism. You don't own your labor. Part of your labor goes to the government. You're back in the bondage of Egypt. And of course, the bondage of Egypt is similar to Babylon. When Jacob was in bondage to Laban, he had to work for Laban. And the first deal was to get Rachel, and the second 7 years was to get Leah. Well, actually not to get Leah, but to get Rachel, because he pulled a switcheroo on him, and he ended up marrying Leah and didn't realize it, and he says, "What I wanted Rachel." So he said, well, another 7 years you could take Rachel as your wife now. So, but now he owes 7 years of labor. And before he was earning. So this, theoretically, that's the sort of capitalism. I don't recommend that particular practice in capitalism, although I think that you should ask the father for the hand in marriage. I don't think he should make it such a commercial enterprise. But it was very important that it be a commercial enterprise, because later on when he leaves, God tells him time to leave. This is after almost 21 years. Laban's all upset. You're taking my possessions, he says. Well, wait a minute. They're not your possessions. I work for you. I paid you. Real time substance. My sweat. My blood. My tears. I paid you. They're mine now. But Laban wanted to think, well, I sold it to you, but they're still mine. And see, in the global economy, you can go and buy this car and try to drive it down the road. Well, you've got to go get the government sticker to have the permission to drive it. And then once you got the sticker, you may have to go get a driver's license. It wasn't always that way, but they can make those rules. And there are legitimate rules, and there's a reason why they make those rules. Because you are steadily moving into the kind of economy that globalism... If you didn't do that... I remember when they first came out with driver's license in North Dakota, way back when my mother was still a teenager. But you didn't even have to pay for it. And most people didn't use it. You'd go down and get it. You didn't have any tests to take or anything. You just get a piece of paper that says you're licensed to drive in the state of North Dakota. Later on, it would cost you $2. Later on, they added testing. But you had this driver's license, maybe to get insurance, maybe just to kind of designate that, you know, you were driving, that you're a driver. But like I said, there was no test, no written test, no behind the wheel test. You just went down and got it. But then it gradually changed, and you have all kinds of requirements you have to make. And people say it's for safety. But it's actually to determine ownership. Not only of the car, but of the guy who's using the car. Because all this started coming back about after you moved from just weights and measures to Federal Reserve notes. That's not a coincidence. That's a part of the deal. Now, there were notes around long before the Federal Reserve. Every bank could issue notes. I mean, when you write a check, you're literally issuing a note. And it has value, and somebody will go use it. But nowadays, when you issue a check or you get a $20 bill, you can't go down and buy an actual just weights and measures with those things. You're just going to get more scarabs. There's another word that comes in the study of money is a tessera. They had that in Rome. That's a Latin word. Well, a tessera was a little clay coin again, and it had a certain value. Now, we don't find, well, they are around. You find them in excavations. Most of the time, you can't read them anymore. They're all wore away. But they're not real big collectibles. And they had a number of different purposes depending on what was carved on that clay tessera. But they were used as money. But for a long time there, Rome had gold and silver coin. About the time of Nero, they started taking, the silver out of the silver coins. By the time Diocletian came along, there was no more silver in the coins. And like we've said many times, bread used to cost a denarii for a sack of wheat. I think it was more than a denarii. I think it was like 6 denarii for a sack of wheat. A sack of wheat would be about 30 pounds. But by the time Diocletian came along, it would take you thousands and thousands of denarii. But the difference was the denarii was no longer silver. They had taken all the silver out. So this was a move towards a global economy. A one-world economy. The problem was back there with Rome, as you had Parthians and you had still had barbarians way up north, and they weren't going along with the Roman system. So it wasn't, but they were setting the pattern. All the temples had depositories in the temple. Ephesus was literally a world bank. They had insurance, and they would underwrite other temples with the money that was paid in, 127 different countries paid into the temple at Ephesus. So this was a complex economy, but it was moving away from the kingdom economy. And the reason I bring this up is so that you know that when Jesus came along, he was directing people back to capitalism. That's why he had parables about capitalism. He was directing people back to a system where there was no forced taxes. That you would say, well, if all things were equal, I would owe this much. But I don't have it. So they ask, what do you have that you can pay? And well, I can pay this much. And so they'd write down, it was told by Jesus, write down paid in full. That's not a policy with the IRS. That's a policy in the kingdom. But most people aren't in the kingdom today because they haven't been following Christ. They haven't been following Moses. They've been actually following Nimrod and Cain and Pharaoh. All the people are. It doesn't really matter if they're Catholics or Protestants or Jews or Muslims. Jews and Muslims claim to follow Abraham and Moses. They even mention Jesus in the Quran. I've been going over the Quran again, doing a lot of reading on it. I'm amazed that people even think that it's a holy book. But I'm going to keep looking at it and try to figure it out. I want to understand how they come to the conclusions they come to, because I know Abraham. I know Moses. I know Jesus Christ pretty well. I mean, I don't know him perfectly, but we study that all the time by studying the Bible. But Muhammad or Mohammed, It was called Machmet originally. A lot of people are following that book. And so I'm trying to figure out, so what do they see in that book? Why are they drawn to that book? Why are they drawn to the different religious groups? Now, there's different religious groups that call themselves Christians. We call them denominations. To me, there's only one denominator in Christianity, and that's Christ. I don't care if you're Baptist or Methodist or Catholic or Jehovah's Witness or whatever Christian denomination you claim you are. I want to know, are you following Christ? And of course, you should want to know that too. You know, that's why James warns you that, you know, without works, your claim to faith may be actually dead. That's why Jesus mentions that there'll be people who think they're following me and they're doing great things in my name, but they're actually workers of iniquity. So Jesus warned us about that. So we should all want to know, are we doing anything that might be works of iniquity? That might be going towards the ways of Nimrod instead of the ways of Christ? And Moses, Christ and Moses seem to be in agreement, in my opinion. And the more we study Leviticus, for those who want to study them together, you can go to Preparing You. We have the whole Bible there. We've got a lot of work already done and more coming. But if you really want to know that and you want to live that, because you have to be a doer of the word. Now, that's not my words. That's Jesus. He says, not hearers only. You can't just say, Lord, Lord. You got to be a doer of the word. Not that you earn the right to the kingdom, because there's never enough you could do to earn the right to the kingdom. But if you're not actually walking the walk and being the doer, you don't really have faith, which is what James was saying, what Paul was saying, what Peter was saying. As a matter of fact, they said that if you engage in covetous practices, you're going to become those human resources again. You're going to end up in a global economy. And you're going to be one of the human resources in that global economy. And that's what certain elements of God's creation want you to end up. They don't want you to have dominion. God gave man dominion on this planet. They want to take that away from you. And that's why God told you to dress it and keep it, because there is a possibility you will lose dominion to somebody else on this planet. On this globe. You know, we're going to talk global economy. In the global economy, somebody else owns this planet, not man. And man is now just cattle on the land. Subject on the land. Like beef cows or sheep or anything. They're just human resources. And we can give you a lot of stuff right in the news, right in the law today that suggests that you're human resources. I mean, they're counting you. They got you all numbered. That's evidence. You know, that I'm all for that, what do they call it? SAVE Act. That's a big thing in the last weeks or so. I'm all for that. So they can have an honest vote. I'm just absolutely curious that if you actually had an honest vote, where you actually knew who was voting, you counted them with real hard ballots, all that kind of stuff. I don't vote myself. I'm working on the solution. The solution is the kingdom. But I don't begrudge other people voting. But I recommend they only vote in self-defense. If they're in this system, they want to, you know, just talking to people the other day. Here's a little, in our county, we have no morgue. We're a poor county. We have no coroner in our county. If somebody dies, somebody from the only mortuary, I think it's the only mortuary in the county, will come and pick you up. But if you're indigent and you have no money whatsoever, it's expensive to do that. And so they would like to know, will somebody reimburse us? Because it'll break us. Because we have a lot of poor people in this county. You know, so, you know, in Portland, they just put it all on the tax rolls. And we could put it on the tax rolls in this county too, and it becomes another expense of government. We just tax our neighbor. But not very long ago, actually it was a little while ago, somebody in government here said, let's contact the churches and see if the churches will donate money to the people who are absolutely indigent or don't have any relatives, they die, and we have to do something with the body. Usually they cremate it, because that's usually the cheapest way to go. And so they got churches to actually donate. And it was taking care of the expense. You know, that somebody would look at it, and like, does this person have, you know, if he had a trailer or some land, it might go back to the county and they could sell it and they could pay for it or whatever, or put a lien on the property to take care of the body, that kind of thing. But there's always situations where there's no resources. There's no family. And so who has to put that? Is the mortuary the only one we have in the community? They're going to have to pay for all that? No. The churches stepped up. Some of the churches, a lot of them didn't say anything, stepped up. And then somebody died and put in their will they wanted, I don't know what it was, $20,000 to go into a fund to do this. And then, but now, that's been years, and now we need to replenish the funds. Well, most people in most counties would just put it on the tax rolls. But we have a few people, and we've had them for the last few years in the county, that said, no, the people need to take care of this without taxing their neighbor. They need to step up. And so far, in many things, we have one of the largest rural fire departments in the United States, in this county. Puts out hundreds of fires a year, all voluntary. And people fund it voluntarily. That's the way fire departments were back in the days of Benjamin Franklin. It wasn't on the tax rolls. And most of your police work wasn't on the tax rolls. It was the people. It was the hue and cry that came out. We're moving away from that, and it's required that we move away from that if we want to become a new global community. So introducing the removal of, they didn't remove gold and silver. I wrote the Treasury Department once and said, I hear you're coming out with new money. We have new bills in the United States from what we had when I was a kid. And, you know, I've gone through, but I wrote them and I said, Are you going to force the collection of gold and silver? Now, there were times when they did collect the gold. But no, it's all voluntary. But the people are just letting their silver and gold go. Some people are accumulating it. But they don't realize that you also have to have a certain status. But that gets too complicated for what we want to accomplish in this program. So, the point is that you have the kingdom economy. And you have global economy. Well, I've listened to a number of people explaining a lot of the stuff going on in the news today. I look at a lot of things. I actually look up, you know, when they mention certain documents, I look up those documents. I look up testimony. I mean, if you just listen to the news, they will tell you this and this and this and this. And most of it is just like with COVID. When COVID came out, they were telling, you know, everybody in our county isn't that smart. We actually had somebody in the county order 3 refrigeration trucks to take care of all the dead bodies from COVID. And they actually ended up paying for their delivery to the county. We didn't have any COVID deaths. We eventually had deaths from vaccinations, where a person, perfectly healthy person, got a vaccination within 72 hours, they were dead. They were paralyzed within 24 hours, had to be taken to the hospital, and within 72, they were dead. Now, we had more than one instance similar to that. Now, of course, we've had lots of people that suddenly died of myocarditis. I say lots of people. Any small number is a lot of people in a county as small as ours. We have a very large county, but the people are all spread out. We also have the least vaccinated county in the state of Oregon, maybe in several states. And we have less deaths from COVID than anybody. We don't really have any any deaths from COVID. We have a few people that had a number of morbidities that died from the flu, which would probably die from a standard flu. But we do have deaths from the vaccination. But if you were listening to the news, you would think, you know, like some crazy guy thought, oh, we gotta go out there and get all these refrigeration trucks because there's going to be dead bodies everywhere. A doctor in the hospital wanted somebody in government here to make the sheriff set up roadblocks so nobody could come in and out of the county. This is how fear just gripped people. Most of it, of course, I was almost, during that, the first word of COVID and everything like that, the governor of the state of Oregon invited 400 delegates to come from China. And that's where COVID got into Oregon. It's either 400 or 300. I may have that number slight. I know it's at least 300. I think it was 400 delegates that came from China. They were all over the state capitol. My son was up in the state capitol during this or just immediately after this. He got COVID. His wife got COVID. They came home. I got COVID. My wife got COVID, pretty much in that order. And we all got better. I slept for almost 2 days, drank lots of water, and was back working. And my wife did my chores while I was down for the count. Very tired. I got up and did some stuff, but it really drained me. And my son-in-law got it. And he lost his ability to taste thing. But then we discovered that, oh, you need zinc. He got zinc, and the taste came back. How did we figure all this stuff out? Well, I was already writing articles that included the studies of Dr. Suzuki from the University of Georgetown. Because I don't depend on the news to decide what I should do today or tomorrow. I look at news. I look at, you know, all kinds of news reports. I look up when they say, make certain claims. I know, you can actually look that up and find out if that's true. You know, in the case of Trump, yeah, there's still speculation all over the place as to why he went into Iran. Well, there's several factors, as there always are with any kind of decision like that. But he always had an intention to have a showdown with Iran, probably not to the extent what we're seeing now. And he was probably coerced by bad actors into having some of the extent. Where it's all going to go, I don't know. I understand that what's the motivation behind him. But what's the motivation and power behind the events? Is it people? Or are people manipulated by spirit? We know that creation itself, according to the Bible, was without form until the spirit moved upon the waters. Well, we're all 75% water. So what spirit is moving people to move away from a kingdom economy, a capitalist society, where you're free from things public? Like I said, that city, read our article on citizenship, 14th Amendment citizen definition, right in, you know, I'm not making this up. It's right in the Black's Law Dictionary defining citizenship, where the right to contract, the right to marry is subject to the administration of government. And the same rights, natural rights, are not subject to the administration of government. Where they're subject to the administration of government is under the 14th Amendment. Now, nobody can pass the 14th Amendment and make you subject. Nobody can pass a law and suddenly say that, you know, 20, 30, 40% of your labor belongs to the government. That would be unconstitutional. They couldn't do that. And you could eventually take it up, and with most Supreme Courts would admit it. But that's not, because they passed rules isn't why you're subject. It's because you left the ways of kingdom economics and were willing to move into another form of economics, a Nimrod form of economics, And what's happened is that some people, like Trump, but not just Trump, there's a lot of other people that have seen it too, not large numbers. Most people just watch the news or go on TikTok or, you know, they get all their information that sounds good on X or wherever, and they put it together and they say that makes sense, but they don't do the extra homework to find out what's really going on. And even if they found out all the facts, they may not know how to order those facts, like the Levites and the priests would order the wood being counsel, information, so that they're, when they divide the sacrifice amongst the people, they do it in a way that strengthens the people. Because if you do it wrong, you'll weaken the people. You need that spirit moving in your priests, in your ministers, in the stones of the altar, in your police force, which is everybody, in your courts, which is all your married husbands, heads of family, that's who runs the courts, and in your appeals courts, which were, in the case of Israel, was the Levites. And the Levites were in charge of all the social welfare throughout the system. They were health, education, and welfare. Yeah, I know somebody who might get a role in the Oregon government, and if they do, their plan is to fire thousands and thousands of Oregonian employees. Because we don't need them. They're not doing anything. They're not making people better. But they're also going to promote the fact that people need to take responsibility back for themselves. Now, don't know if they'll ever get there. If they do, that's what they're hoping to do. And the situation may be timely because other things may have already taken place. Just like in the bondage of Egypt, plagues were coming. Most of those plagues were natural events that could occur, and there was actually a reason why they could occur at that time. Moses had the insight to predict them, and they certainly took place. Now, the last one, that's a little unique, but there's actually a logical reason why the last plague took place, but we won't go into that. But the point is timing is everything. And if your actions and decisions are going to be timed properly, you need to have somebody guiding you that is outside of time and space, that is the unmoved mover. And it's his spirit that's going to tell you how to decipher the facts that you have. Just because I know why, you know, I mean, Trump published his plans, his strategic national plans. They're published. Every president's supposed to do it. He actually published pretty detailed plans, what he was planning to do. And he is actually making war, not on Iran, although he's been kind of sucked into some of that. He was always planning to not let them get, you know, certain kinds of missiles. They already had too many ballistic missiles, and a lot of people were in danger because of those ballistic missiles. But there are certain elements in the world today, and we see the World Economic Forum. The World Economic Forum is what we get to see. There is a British financial empire that's behind the scenes, and it's been behind the scenes since they realized they're not going to be able to maintain their actual physical empire where the sun never set with their ships. Because, I mean, their first lesson to that was the United States or the American colonies. But the American colonies were an exception because they actually had earned their freedom before the American Revolution. And we've explained this. It wasn't the people who revolted in the American Revolution. It was the king who revolted. And we explained that in our articles and books on the subject. But unfortunately, what happened is that the people's eyes were darkened. This was a slow process over a couple hundred years, so they could not see what a truly kingdom economy is. You know, Trump always talks about making America great, but he never addresses, and I don't know if he even knows, I don't know, Trump has a tendency to talk about what he wants to talk about. He does drop hints all the time. And he is really actually a smart guy. But he was fooled with the COVID thing. He believed people like Fauci with the COVID thing. But he never called. So I could never tell him. That, you know, I saw Fauci for like less than 120 seconds. And I saw Fauci long before COVID. I knew he wasn't to be trusted. I knew he was a narcissistic opportunist that was in it for the money and the power. But other people don't see it. I've actually had people come up and try to convince me otherwise. But there's a spirit in people that is helping them make their decisions, because we're a lot more puppets than we'd like to think. We don't want to think of ourselves as a puppet. We don't want to think that we're manipulated by other people's opinion. The reality is if you get into a room full of people with a certain opinion, they can start to affect you. And the more empathetic you are, you may be a very caring person. I just put up an article on empathy today. I was led to do it. I just put up the whole article at Preparing You. You can look up empathy. But an empathetic person actually is very possibly could become a healer if they tap into the Holy Spirit. Because they feel other people's pain. They feel other people's anxiety. I know of people who just touch somebody and they will have the pain that that person has, even though they had no knowledge that that person had a pain. They can sit down near somebody and they can feel what that person is feeling. That's a real thing because they're empathetic. But if you're just empathetic without the Holy Spirit, it can make you sick. It can make you unwell. It can actually control your thinking and make you think the way other people think, because you're empathetic and you've created a connection with them. And your thoughts are no longer your thoughts. They're influenced by other people around you. Nobody likes to think that, but that's actually the case. That's part of the process of moving you from a kingdom economy to a global economy. So, somebody at the Promethean Action Group, or Promethean Action, you can look that up. Kokinda, I think, is one of the, Barbara is one of the other people that speak in there. They're very smart people. They're very pro-Trump. Because they're very pro going after the British financial empire. That's the way they usually refer to it, as the British financial empire. It involves France. It involves Germany. It involves a lot of the countries that we now see in NATO. The Rothschilds, all that, they're a part of that. They're kind of what you would call in the Bible and Revelations, the merchants of the earth. Which it says in Revelation, they have a full stock. They own everything. You know, and of course, that's what Klaus Schwab says. You'll own nothing. Well, if you own nothing, somebody owns everything. Well, that's the traveling merchants of the earth that we see in the Revelation. They own everything, have a full stock, including slaves and souls of men. And of course, we just recently talks about souls. A soul includes your corporeal and incorporeal hereditaments of personality. That would mean your rights to things and your rights to action. You know, your those life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Pursuit of happiness is an action. So that would be a part of your incorporeal hereditaments of personality. That's your soul. That's all encompassed in your soul. The traveling merchants of the earth are going to own that. You're not going to be free. As a matter of fact, a lot of you aren't free right now. But this is a spiritual pattern that is operating in the world and forming what we see in the news. It's also forming our personal opinions. So that, you know, you know, you hear on the news that there's a pandemic and you order refrigeration trucks to be delivered to the county at the county's expense. You know, and to pile up all the dead bodies. And they were sure that it was going to happen. And doctors at the hospital wanted roadblocks on all the roads. Well, half the roads are Forest Service roads. We wouldn't have enough policemen to put at a fraction of the roads that come in and out of the county. If we just deal with Highway 31, we could block that off, because that's the only blacktop highway that, well, it's not the only one, but it's one of the major ones that go from top to bottom in the county. But there's no way we were going to do that, and it's not legal. I have a really funny story about that, but we'll not do it on this program. Because I know the people who could block the road. But have blocked the road off at times. But what I'm trying to impart to you is that globalism, what we see, we call it New World Order, we call it globalism, the World Economic Forum. Of course, there you have it right there in the name, Economic Forum. If they get you doing Babylonian, that's really what we're dealing with, is Babylon. The Babylonic system, and that's why I mentioned Nimrod at the beginning, and Cain, and Pharaoh. And I can put right in that group, Cain, Pharaoh, FDR, LBJ, Obama, and Trump. Because so far, even though he wants to do away with the influence of these bankers that have been making wars all over the world for at least 50 years, I'm sure I can go back to 1812 and find them manipulating politics in the world. I mean, why did Britain, France, and Germany conspire together to put Khomeini in power in Iran? Why did they do that? Of course, to be fair, CIA was putting the Shah into Iran. But they would have never got away with it had all the Iranians, especially the Persians, been actually following the way. You know, the way of John the Baptist, who had been in Persia, and at least in Parthia. Basically, what I was saying is that there's a spirit that starts to move and dwell in people, and it begins to mold their thinking, mold their society. What some of these people, like Promethean Action and Donald Trump, seems to be doing it. I mean, he gives us all the key words, you know, the whole idea of tariffs, the Monroe Doctrine, all these things are countering that. We're trying to counter it back in the days of Hamiltonian economics. And there is a certain viability in Hamiltonian economics, but Hamiltonian economics falls far short of the kingdom. Because it was closer back then, but America was a different country. There was nobody, all the citizens weren't, there was no 14th Amendment, all the citizens weren't numbered, they weren't operating out of a socialist state. General welfare was general welfare, although Hamilton wanted to make it individual welfare. That was so unpopular, it was actually considered a sin by most Americans to have individual welfare financed by the government. And of course it is a sin, because it's a covetous practice that will do what? According to Peter, it will make you merchandise. If you desire benefits from the government, who provides those benefits by exercising authority one over the other. Those of you who know what I'm quoting the Bible here. Jesus said, it's not to be that way with you. You're not to go to the government and make the government your benefactor if the government's going to exercise authority one over the other to provide you with those benefits. That is desiring benefits at the expense of your neighbor. If you're doing that, you're not following Christ. It's that simple. But you may think you're following Christ because you're maybe too empathetic. But somehow the spirit of Nimrod has gotten into you. the Promethean Action Group thinks that that somehow or other Trump is going to defeat, strangle these financial powers that have been manipulating wars in South America for years and years. Why they put, you know, it was a clear plan. If you look at, I mean, who started Israel? Who made Israel possible? They had already made it possible for some of the Arab states. Iran, Kuwait, Qatar, all these stuff. These weren't countries forever. After World War II, Britain realized, or long before World War II, Britain realized that they were not going to be able to maintain their empire. So they tried to create a secret empire, a financial empire that was dependent upon things like Lloyd's of London and loaning money, World Bank, loaning money to this country or that country. A few countries have recently decided, no, we don't want it to borrow that money from the World Bank or anybody else. That will just live a more austere life and make it ourselves. Poland is starting to realize this, and they're starting to take back some of the responsibilities. Not quite like kingdom, but more than they were before. The more you get away from social welfare through men who exercise authority, the closer to the kingdom you get. And the beautiful thing is you can do that right now. And it will change the spirit that flows in you. If you think the problem is the fact that people are offering welfare at the expense of their neighbor, that's not the problem. Any more than creating a Federal Reserve was the problem. The problem was that people were willing to accept Federal Reserve notes rather than only trade with other people using just weights and measures. Because the just weights and measures were still there. And, of course, you know, eventually when you became a human resource, whatever was in your pocket was now belonging to the state. So you have things like HJR 192. Which says that they could confiscate all the gold in the people. Now, eventually, with another law, they rescinded HJR 192, but the gold and silver in the pockets of any U.S. citizen, still, they only have a legal title. They don't own it. But still, if you start seeking the kingdom, start developing that system, you can still exercise capitalism amongst yourselves. But you got to know who else, and you have to be able to identify people that really want to be kingdom. It's not people who don't like the government. It's not the people who are rebels, who hate the government, don't like to be taxed. Because people who don't like to be taxed probably won't like to be to tithe either. Israel had a huge amount of tithing. More than they needed. They were able to take care of all the needs of the people in time of war and time of peace. And they were creating these bonds. When things got too affluent, though, then their system started breaking down. We can go through that when we read in Samuel and even in Chronicles and stuff like that. They started straying from the formula. I'm trying to get people to see the formula. So the global economics makes you a human resource, makes you a subject, makes you merchandise, where you're owned and you own nothing except by privilege. You can have a legal title. Legal title is the privilege of ownership. They can take it away from you anytime. You got a house, got a legal title to it. You don't pay taxes for a couple of years, they'll take the whole house away from you. I've seen houses taken away from people that owed $6 taxes. They thought they had paid everything. They were $6 short, and they took their house away from them. Now, that's crazy. Widows and orphans robbed every day with inheritance tax. And there shouldn't be any inheritance tax. That's your government robs the widows and orphans. It covers, you covet your neighbor's goods through men who exercise authority. You don't love your neighbor as yourself. You turn a blind eye when your neighbor is starving or hungry or being attacked in the street. Somebody was being attacked the other day and people were videoing it, but nobody was coming to their aid. That tells you, if you wanted something to look at, am I getting close to globalism? Am I getting close to Babylon? There is your evidence. Because the global economy is the Babylon economy. You have somebody at the top, and you're his human resources down below. Now, he'll have systems of social welfare. David talks about them. Paul talks about them. There are tables that are a snare and a trap. Snare and a trap is what? They're going to make you merchandise. They're going to curse your children because your children are going to grow up to be merchandise too. You have completely gone the opposite way of the kingdom of God. Kingdom of God, their economy is capitalism. Their social welfare system is faith, hope, and charity. Their court system, their police force is the hue and cry, where you want justice for your neighbor. You will come to the aid of your neighbor. This is one of my beefs with Islam. Not that I don't find the same characteristics amongst modern Judaism, amongst modern Christianity, but it's very clear in Islam. It's just, I mean, Islam, that's a lot of people. So you would have to go neighborhood by neighborhood to see. But the characteristic is very simple. You got 80% of the people are not radical Muslims. They're not blowing up anybody. They're not going in with vests. They're not, beating up people because they don't have a hijab on. They're just not doing it. But they'll turn a blind eye when the radicals do it. They won't come to the aid. Other people. Now, that's not always the case. There's been movies made about American soldiers who were taken into a village and their village was attacked and they defended him because their principle was he's their guests in our village. We can't turn them over to, I think it was the Taliban in this case. And they fought and some of them died protecting not their soldiers, but U.S. soldiers. So you have to always take this on a case-by-case business. That's why I say my problem with Islam, it's not with Muslims. Individually, I can talk about problems with some Muslims, but I can't put all Muslims in the same basket. But while I can say that the Bible is an inspired word of God, all the people who read the Bible are not inspired by God. And so they will have, and the Bible talks about this, private interpretations of what the Bible says. But it just ain't so. It ain't true. But when you start realizing there is a God and that He's in control, people can tell you about COVID, and I immediately, when I heard about it, I said, okay, where do I look? What's really going on? And God would show me where to look in a very short period of time, because I work full-time otherwise, in a very short period of time, although often up till midnight and after, trying to find out what the answer is. We told people. Now, most of the people in our network, a lot of them already had an idea. I'm sure some of them talked to other people. I just heard more stories that evidently counties down in California were contacting our county, trying to figure out how to avoid these mandates that were coming down in California. And people that were protecting this county, because they understood the problem, they had insight into it, which, yeah, they sit and eat with me a lot of times, so they knew, because I was telling them to. But I knew that was their job to go do that. That's not my job. My job was to tell the people in the network, to put it on at Preparing You. You can go look up our article on numerous scientists. We go through. It was clear from the beginning. There was no way any vaccination, especially an mRNA vaccination, was going to be anything but detrimental to people. I still hear people saying, well, it saved lives. It saved nobody's life. Zero. Absolutely zero people were saved by the vaccination. Millions have died, and even more will never be born because of the vaccination. And if somebody doesn't like that, prove me wrong. Because there's plenty of evidence coming out all the time. It's not going to be in most of your news. You know, I posted a thing that, trying to remember her name, Hughes. I can't remember her old name. Very, very tough talking lady. I'm impressed with her courage. And she's a good mother. She takes care of her kids and everything. She was gone for a while. Was she having kids? I think she had twins. But anyway, Brittany Hughes, that's it. And she pointed out the fact, a survey, independent of her, it wasn't her survey, that Google News published 341 stories in a given period of time. They're all extremely liberal. And today, when you say extremely liberal, it's not what liberal used to mean. Extremely left. And this was an independent survey. It wasn't by her or by conservatives or anything. And 11 stories that could be classified as conservatives. And most of those 11 stories had nothing to do with politics. I didn't go and take the time to go find the stories. You could probably do that and find out which 11 stories. But she did mention a few of the places that they got these stories from. And one of them, I wouldn't read that magazine unless it was the last thing on the shelf, that newspaper, because it's not a very good outlet. But I usually listen to both sides as much as I can, but whenever I'm listening to them, I'm praying about it. You know, I get up all night long. We're lambing now, so I get up all night. Every 2 hours, I'm up, sometimes more. And I just wake up and get up and go out and check the sheep. I have a cow that is supposed to calve here pretty shortly. I go check her. And when I do it, I was noticing that, you know, I go out and the only company I have is the moon and the stars, and I try to be very quiet so I don't disturb anybody, because then you can see what's going on better. But I find myself, my mind is engrossed in prayer. And I was going to read them, I'll probably read it the next time we have our program. There's numerous statements, New Testament, Old Testament, that talk about waiting and praying. And of course, I've always said the idea of waiting, meditation is waiting upon the Lord. Some people call meditation being mindful. I'm empathetic to the confusion in the world, where people think that bombing Iran is actually going to help us. Is it going to hurt us? We're going to be hurt, but it isn't because of bombing Iran. It's going to have whatever effect that it has. But what hurts us is we're not actually doing what Christ said. We're not actually gathering in the tens, hundreds, and thousands and creating an kingdom economics. Now, you can start creating a kingdom economics while you still have paper notes. You don't have to get rid of the Federal Reserve. You don't have to get rid of Trump. Now, there are going to be some people trying to get rid of Trump. There's large numbers of people that want. People are losing billions of dollars. The World Bank, or well, the Babylonic, you know, like I said, the people who believe in the divine right of kings believe that you don't have a divine right. You should be subject to the king. That's Babylon. That's Nimrod thinking. That's Lebanon thinking. And they're going to create what you would call an idolatrous system, because they're going to create a covetous system. That's why you see so much. You know, if England wants to save themselves, get rid of social welfare through the state. Iran is going to have a chance, maybe, to form their own government. A lot of the Persians want to do that. I know a lot of Iranians, and they're for that. But if you don't create a system in line with the kingdom of God, social will, and they can start doing that right now, and they're probably going to have to, because they're, especially if they continue the bombing, because they're going to have to literally start from scratch. But you can do that in that country. It's a very fertile country. You know, it's not like Saudi Arabia. And they could do that, but they need to think kingdom. The religion that used to be there in Persia way back is Zoroastrian. And we know very little about it because there wasn't much written about it until it was already corrupted. But the basics, from the best I can tell, from the most ancient of accounting of it, it wasn't far from the ways of the kingdom. Very simplistic. Now, people argue that because they say, well, there's dualism in it. But most of these arguments are about Zoroastrianism hundreds and hundreds of years, centuries and centuries after the... Usually, this is what I point out, is God sends his messengers from the beginning all over the world. And they're born here, they're born there, and they tell you how it works, and people either accept it. If they start a religion, somebody will come along and try to corrupt it. That's what they did with Judaism. That's what they did with Christianity. That they corrupted it. And they made it contrary to what Christ said, contrary to what Moses said. And we have a lot of Bible studies, and a lot of people aren't going to believe that if they're just hearing us for the first time. We show you what Jesus said, and you tell me, are you doing it? We show you what Jesus said not to do. You tell me, are you doing that? Because if you're doing that, then you're not following Jesus, because you're doing opposite of what he said. And you're not doing what he did say to do. And that's very clear. And so if you don't follow Jesus, you will be swept away with the global current. You will end up owning nothing, but I can't guarantee that you'll be happy. There'll be a lot of weeping and gnashing of the teeth, but it's spiritual. And you have no control over the spirit. It isn't this guy or that guy or this policy or that policy. Although, if you create a policy of covetousness, you're going to move more towards the bondage of Babylon, which we call mystery Babylon in Revelation, and I tell people this, and I did studies on it. The word mystery actually could be translated secret. It's secret, but people don't know that they're in Babylon. That's why the Promethean Action Group is constantly referring to the British Financial Banking Insurance Empire. And that's a way to describe it. But it's Babylon. And it's going to take you in the ways of destruction. Of course, eventually the merchants of the earth will be destroyed too. I was just talking to somebody about that, how that all works. And it's all in prophecy. Now, should I start with the prophecy of the bad things and the good things? Or should I start with what you need to do? Well, I'm starting with what you need to do. What you need to do is come together in the tens, fifties, hundreds, and thousands. Start learning what it means to care about one another by actually sacrificing one for another. Learn to wait upon the Lord, not upon your own ambitions, your own philosophies, your own ideologies. There are no enemies but darkness. And Jesus came that the world might see the light. But some stayed in darkness and wanted to kill Jesus. Or ignore him. Or go the other way. Or just not go his way. And, of course, I started to say, and one of my problems with Islam, like I was saying, is 80% are mostly peaceful. A lot of people became Islamic or Muslims or joined, you know, the converted, because the radicals who usually come into a country with swords and are nowadays with guns, etc., and spread their religion by that way, which is, you know, Christianity spread by the word, by the reasoning of Christianity. Christianity was, and also because of the collapse of the Roman Empire. as the Roman Empire collapsed, the people who were real Christians, the early church, were taking care of the needy through faith, hope, and charity, and Rome wasn't taking care of anybody. And then, of course, with the plagues, people poured out of the cities. But these, a lot of these places, and wars and rumors of war, a lot of these places became Christian because they were the only, they weren't necessarily good Christians, but they were working in that way. Unfortunately, they started creating all kinds of denominations and divisions, but Christianity is simple. And I just described it earlier. The let God teach you the doctrine. You can talk about it. You can discuss these things. But your faith has to come from the Spirit, not from your brain, not from your ideology, not from your private interpretation of the text. It comes from the leading of the Holy Spirit. And are you being led by the Holy Spirit? Are you forgiving? Are you giving? Did you come to serve? Or did you come to control? And one of the things you see in Islam is there's a huge amount of abuse of women. And I say if you want to oppress a nation, first you oppress the women. And then we see that oppression going over to the citizens of, like, Iran. Millions and millions were driven out of the country. Millions were killed. At least before 1988, it looks like at least 1.3 million were killed. It could be higher. We don't know. But we know that they brought in militias from other Muslim countries to create their, Bazaji and their core to keep the people in order. Personally, I think that the only hope is that their military, they have a military junta and allow the people to create an interim form of government, but they're going to need military to get the radicals under control. That's not common amongst Islam because, like I said, the 80% don't come to the aid of the others because they became Muslim because they didn't want, the persecution. They just went along to get along. They're what you would call the lukewarm. Now, again, it's not always the case. You'll always find these heroic people everywhere because God is in charge of who gets born and who doesn't get born. He's putting the souls in the people. So he can put great people being born amongst not so great people. But God's desire is that all people seek the light, seek the truth, seek the way. And if you're not doing that with your whole heart, mind, and soul, putting in the time, your eyes will be darkened. I mean, you can learn a lot, and then your eyes can start to be darkened. And, like I said with, I don't know if I finished it, I realize that sometimes I start these stories and never quite finish them, or I get to a certain point, but The fact is that there is clear bias. We saw it with COVID. We're seeing it with the events today. But all that starts to melt away when we focus on the very spiritual aspects of the nature of the kingdom and the kingdom economy and the kingdom government and the kingdom courts. We see courts so abusive, they're going to, I won't go into it, but locally, they're going to get rid of the local DA. And he was so promising, but he's lazy. He won't prosecute real criminals. There seems to be an obsessive spirit where people kill children and they get 120 days of probation. They rape children and they get off. That happens. It shouldn't happen anywhere. But it happens a lot in Germany, France, Switzerland, Sweden. And I'm in touch with people that live there and they see this. And of course it doesn't always get reported in the news. That same bias, you look up some of these things and, the algorithms on Google, they just cut that out. They don't want you to see that. Might prejudice people. But they're already prejudiced. The people that are controlling things. Because the huge part of their thinking is blacked out. That's why it's secret Babylon. Because they don't want to see. That's why I pointed out in our recent study on Leviticus that confession was a very important thing. You have to see where you're going wrong. And every day you need to be mindful of that in prayer and concern for others. So anyway, I had all kinds of notes on this that we could go through. I see the situation with the war in Iran is changing again. Be careful of negative thinking. Now, I don't want people thinking that we should have positive thinking. But if you realize that God is in control, and you can't necessarily control the actions of other people, you can barely control your own actions, and often your own thinking. You don't have as much control. If you're climbing around in the tree of knowledge, you can be persuaded. You need to always go back to that mindful state where, and that mindful state, which I call waiting upon the Lord. You know, when I talk about meditation, I talk about it in the sense of waiting upon the Lord. You're not coming up with the answer. You're confessing that you don't know the answer. It's outside of the range of the reach of your control. You're not going to get a big constituency that's going to go out there and change the government's mind. What you want to do is give God the opportunity to change your mind. That's what repentance is. You're thinking a different way. But you don't know, you're not going to figure out the way you should think by eating in the tree of knowledge. You're only going to figure out the way you should think through divine inspiration by God. You can have knowledge, but know this, knowledge is a great temptation to start thinking you got it figured out. You don't always have it figured out. I don't have it figured out from moment to moment. I know what the governments of today are doing is very dangerous, but I also know that there are people in government today all over the world in banking and finance and behind the scenes that are in love with the ways of Nimrod. They're in love with exercising authority one over the other. They're, as a matter of fact, they're addicted to it. And then there are millions upon millions who are addicted to the wages of unrighteousness that you get when men who exercise authority take away from your neighbor. So they're addicted to the benefits. And there are millions upon millions of people that are afraid to step out of the boat and not depend upon the benefits. They're afraid to do it. And that's why Jesus starts with fear not. And continues with love thy neighbor as thyself. And lay down your life for your fellow man. These are the keys to the kingdom. And to kingdom economics. Both the soul economics. Because see, if you choose the way of God, your soul will not be the merchandise of the merchants of the earth. Because the merchants of the earth are the ones who are putting together this mystery Babylon, this globalist society where you own nothing and you're just a human resource. Now, with that, I can make comments. I've American thought leaders, Epoch Times, written a lot of articles about organ harvesting. China seems to be regularly organ harvesting to the tune of billions of dollars. You can schedule a liver transplant, a heart transplant, to fly there and immediately go into surgery. You had it pre-scheduled. Where are they getting those hearts? And they're asked that. And they say, well, these are condemned prisoners that volunteered to do it. Yeah. No, it's Uyghurs and Pulangong and dissidents. And they're perfectly okay with it. That's where becoming a human resource goes. That hell is a collective. If you study all the places where they're talking about demons controlling people, you know, like, we are legion. Because it's a collective. The kingdom of heaven is full of individuals that are guided not by rulers, but by the Spirit of God ruling in their heart. And if you're playing the blame game, if you're full of fear and anxiety and worried about what's going to happen, I mean, bad things are going to happen. Absolutely. We shouldn't be afraid of it. I mean, do you trust in God or not? You might be afraid of the fact that you're not really trusting in God and that your faith is false. But you shouldn't be afraid of that. You should just be questioning it. That's where waiting and praying comes in. Because you want to believe that you're actually following the Spirit of God. And the Spirit that Moses followed. The Spirit that Christ said He would send. The Comforter. And so, you want, you don't do it out of fear, but out of respect, that you ask the question, am I really following the Holy Spirit or not? Because great changes are coming. They're always there coming. And prophecies will be fulfilled. And some of them are already done. Of course, a lot of people are going to say, oh, well, I'm a preterist and all that. There's all kinds of prophecies from all kinds of sources. But it's very clear that we've left the Republic a long time ago, that people are voting in, you know, they want to have, you know, Obamacare and Medicare and health care and more money for Social Security, and everybody's worried that my gas price might go up. It probably will go up, and life will become difficult. But when we come out of the womb, we can guarantee life's going to be difficult. It's not going to be easy all the time. And if you approach the light, you're going to see more of those difficulties, but you should fear not. So anyway, that's probably it on global economy. I'll say thank everybody for coming, and peace on your house, and may God be with you. God bless. For more information, go to hisholychurch.org or preparingyou.com. Join the network. Listen to the audios at most podcast providers under Keys to the Kingdom with Brother Gregory. Thanks, everyone, and God bless. Make sure you follow us at His Holy Church on X.